Hi there, and welcome to Daring Dreams, Heart and Strategy in Small Business Marketing. I'm your host, Haley Bowen. Have you ever thought it's too late or you've waited just too long for business ownership? Think again. Today, I'm chatting with purpose-driven business owner, Carrie Carroll of KC Clutter Cure. Welcome, Carrie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Hayley. It's fantastic to be here. I'm very excited for our conversation.
I am too. So there's a lot to unpack today, everybody who's listening and watching, because Carrie's had just a tremendous journey towards entrepreneurship. And I think you guys are all going to be pretty inspired by what she's created and how she's gotten here. So before we jump into that, let's just first talk about what is your business? What do you do?
So KC's Clutter Cure, it's been quite a journey, and it's progressed and evolved as I've gone. So it started out as a decluttering and organizing service. So lots of pantries, lots of children's toy rooms, lots of full houses where people just, life gets busy and you start putting things onto surfaces and then you get busy and then all of a sudden those surfaces grow and now you can't use the surfaces. Then it took a really interesting pivot. With a background in human behavior, I came across hoarding and squalor disorder, and that just ticked all of my boxes. There's not a lot of information known about hoarding and squalor disorder for a very long time. People just presumed that hoarders or people living in squalor were lazy, didn't have a purpose. However, it's now been recognized by the DSM, which is the Mental Health Diagnostic Manual, that hoarding and squalor is actually a mental health disorder, and that people end up in such a state where the things that they're accumulating is serving a purpose of some description. And so I pivoted into specializing in hoarding and squalor disorder. I get a lot more out of my clients, I think, than they do me. I've worked with some incredibly brave people because this is a tough journey for people to go on. So now KC's Clutter Cure focuses on hoarding and squalor disorders.
Wow. And so just so I can kind of unpack this, so I've seen shows about hoarding and stuff like that. So once you unclutter their homes, how do you also offer like a service after or resources or something? So that, because if it is a mental disorder, you said a mental disorder?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how does that go? How do you fix or help with that type of thing?
I think that's where I bring something a little unique. So a lot of the times on the shows, people see, and my clients experience this. They watch those shows and they see people just come in and just use shovels and lots of skip bins and everything gets thrown out. And there's not a lot that's on the television around the psychology behind it. So in a previous career, I was a psych nurse and a behavior management specialist. So in the first instance, I spend a lot of time building rapport and trying to understand where the behaviors are coming from so that I can help the client move through the journey with as minimal distress and emotional strain as possible. And then, yes, where I take it from a hoarded or a squalid state and into a home that is organized and clean and fit for living, if that's what the client wants. A lot of the time it's people that are downsizing, or that it might be an estate, or very sadly though, a lot of my work comes from people who are facing eviction because they have their own backstory and for whatever reason haven't learned the skills or have the supports put in place to be able to maintain a home. So a lot of the time, by the time I come in, these people are in a really distressed state.
Yeah, like almost panic situation at that point, I would think.
And a lot of the time quite angry too, because they can't understand why is this happening? My space is fine. I've been living like this for a very long time and and I'm okay. I don't understand what the problem is. So resistance to change can often be high. And even for the people who feel like they're very ready for the change, as we start working through the things, then a lot of emotions come up and people, it's almost like peeling back the layers of the person themselves, as well as the layers of the things that they've been accumulating. And it's surprising sometimes the things that people want to hang on to because of the memory or because of the emotional need that it fulfills. A lot of people have ties all the way back to their childhood. I had a client whose her thing was beads, and she had, you've never seen so many beads in your life, like more beads than, and she is a crafter and
more,
she's
beads
a very
than a Taylor
good
Swift
crafter.
Concert.
My gosh. Yeah. I think you'd need 15 Taylor Swift concerts. And when we peeled the layers back, we realized that it actually goes back to when she was an 8-year-old child. And she had some experiences where beads featured very strongly. So throughout her life, she used beads to almost create this magical, imaginative world. And then later on in life, she found herself in a dysfunctional relationship, and beads were the things that helped her get through. So for her to be able to part with those was very challenging indeed. And for you and I, we'd go, well, it's just a bead. Like, how many yellow or green beads could you possibly require? But for her, and this is, I think this is a good message for anybody that's listening or watching, is that if you are struggling yourself or you have a family member, remember that it's not about the stuff. It's about what does the stuff mean to you, and really understanding, going within and understanding where that behavior is coming from.
It's interesting because, so my mom is not a hoarder or anything, but she has a couple of rooms that are very packed. And so one year for Christmas, I was like, I am going to get her somebody to help her organize and declutter this one room. Mm-hmm. And so the lady went over, and my mom, she has a lot of stuff. And so she had everything folded perfectly and everything, like all these clothes from different sizes and different eras of her life and all of this stuff. And the person who was decluttering went in, and she would pick up something and show it to her and say, do you wear this? And then my mom would say no. And then she'd just crumple it up and throw it in a garbage bag. And my mom said, like, it was the worst gift I ever got her, because she was so upset that all of these things that she took really good care of were then just crumpled and thrown into a garbage bag. And she unpacked it all. She kept, I think she got rid of some, but she kept some. But it was obviously some kind, it wasn't just the stuff, like you're saying. Like, there was some kind of emotional connection. And I think for my mom, who, she grew up quite poor, not poor, but like close. And I think the stuff has a lot of value to her because she didn't have a lot. And so I don't know. But there's
that's a really good point, Hayley. The era that you're talking about, you know, these people went through the Depression. They went through when there wasn't a lot. So they became very good at recycling. I'll hang on to that and I'll put that aside for later because I might need that. And now we live in this world of abundance where everything is relatively cheap to replace. And so a lot of the people in that age group, you know, you'll find boxes and boxes of gift cards, wrapping paper, envelopes, notepads, things that you and
right.
I may
Mom
not.
Mom has bins of
fabric. Yes, because you just never know when you need that. You know, walk into any shed of someone who's an avid woodworker or a DIY, or there'll be things everywhere, and they'll have multiples of everything, because what happens if I need that later on? So in a lot of sense, the person who is hoarding things believes that they're saving money. They also believe that they're helping the environment because they don't want to throw things out. If yourself and our viewers and listeners think about your own home at the moment, and whether it's minimalized or whether it's cluttered, imagine if somebody came in and said, Hayley, okay, all of those things that you have in your kitchen, we need to get rid of by half. And you'd be like, no, I need those things. No, no, Hayley, it's causing a problem. So when we start thinking about how we would respond if somebody came into our homes and started moving our things, because we don't see our homes as an issue, and neither do these people. So the lady with the beads, she would wake up every morning with a mission in mind, just one bag. I'll just take one bag out and I'll make a pathway to the back door so I can go out onto the veranda. And she'd get up, she'd go to the toilet, she'd have a breakfast, she'd sit down and become overwhelmed. And then she described to me that she didn't actually see the hoard. So you know what it's like when you've got visitors who may not have come over before, or someone that hasn't come over regularly, all of a sudden you see every bit of dust, every cobweb, everything that, and you're frantically running around making your house looking presentable because we don't see it. So even on an extreme scale, people don't see this and their stuff keeps them safe. Imagine going from a room where you've got everything around you to a room that's clear. It's going to be quite scary.
Yeah.
You're going to feel very exposed.
That's so interesting. It reminds me of like eating problems, right? So, you know, I struggle with weight and everybody on the show knows this. And it's kind of the same thing. Like if you take away that comfort food or like the layers of my body, you're exposed, right?
Yes.
And that's how I feel. So when I lose weight, I feel exposed. And it's weird. Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting, okay. So, let's kind of go into how this came to be. So, I know that you started, this business late, like I started in my 40s. I think I was 40 when I started mine and you started yours in your 40s as well. So let's kind of hear like, what was the pivotal moment that you're like, I'm going to leave this career in nursing or what did you call it?
Psych nursing, psychiatric nursing.
Yeah, psychiatric nursing. I'm going to leave that and I'm going to start a business around decluttering. So what happened? Why did that happen?
Well, the journey has been long and full of many opportunities to understand my own level of resilience and tolerance and ability to pivot on change. So there was actually a section in between the psychiatric nursing and starting the business. And I came from when you said that your mother was poor, I understand the struggles of earlier life. So from the age of 12, I didn't have parents due to a family breakdown. I ended up somehow loose in the world, and that led to many years of homelessness, drug addiction, unimaginable abuse. That my earliest memory of abuse started at the age of 8 when I was still in the family home. And the reason that I tell you that is not because it's special or extraordinary. However, that provided a basis for things that happened later in life. So when I was in my 20s, I switched out drug addiction for university degrees and promotions. And on the surface, that seems like a great thing. However, it was being driven by a very unhealthy driver. I was trying to validate and I thought that, you know, if I became educated, because I only did half of the first year of high school due to the homelessness and the foster parents. And so I thought that if with every degree or every promotion that would validate me as a person. And you can imagine the confusion that I felt when that didn't happen because I was looking externally. I wasn't looking internally. And one of the things that I did to make myself feel better, you said food for you. For me, it was buying things. I would get that immediate dopamine rush when I would go out and I would buy things. And I came from a place where I had never had money. So when I started working and I had this money, I would go out and buy things. Throughout my nursing career, so I'm every type of nurse that you can imagine, but psych is where my passion really lied. And that was also a source of confusion for me as well. My job was to help people with mental health issues. And yet I couldn't help myself. So that was very confusing. And I, as I said, I kept looking externally, whereas it wasn't until my 30s that I started looking internally and started unpacking those layers of hurt and anger. And so in my mid-30s, I decided that I was going to have a change. And I was either going to go down two paths. I'd just finished some research and visited your beautiful country to present that research at an international congress. I was either going to go down the path of research, or because the healthcare system is so overrun, it was becoming very red tape heavy. So I was spending more time doing paperwork than I was helping the clients. And the mental health system, I'm not sure what it's like in Canada, but we can only take the top 1%. So I was spending a lot of time telling families, I'm sorry, your loved one's just not sick enough to come into the service. So I moved from down south of Australia, down in New South Wales, and I moved to Queensland, and I started working at a local government. And so I've gone from this high risk, high energy, chaos and emergency driven world into local government, where I learned a valuable lesson that it doesn't matter how you get to your top is your top. So when I first started working, there were these people that were, they were at the same stress level that I would have been if I had have just watched someone successfully harm themselves, take their own lives. And that was a real lesson for me, that it doesn't matter how you get there, your tolerance is your tolerance. And until that tolerance levels is pushed, that won't go any higher. So I spent the next 10 years in executive leadership. I worked my way up from the team leader of a call center to the last 5 or 6 years running a large department that had around 120 staff.
Wow.
And then I still wasn't happy. I'm very, very people orientated, very people orientated. And probably I don't fit the corporate world. The fact that the wages are on the liability side of the ledger tells me exactly what major corporations think of their people. You remove the people and the corporation or all of a sudden isn't functional anymore. So as the universe does the whole of my life, it decided to step in, and we had a new CEO come into the business, and he decided we're going to shake things up. So I think about 15 managers didn't have their contracts renewed, and I was the first. So coming from a background of not being good enough, abandonment issues, not being wanted, and then they go, you know what, we're okay. A lot of those old demons that I thought that I'd processed and put aside, they all came popping back up. So that was a bit of a journey. So I went back to the drawing board, and you're right, this was around when this was 49. I went back to the drawing board and started thinking about, what do I love? What fills my cup, what gets me out of bed every day, and the thing that has been consistent. I love chaos, I love crisis, and I love people. And I love helping people make lasting change. So that's how I came to looking at the world, going, where is it that I can help? And a lot of people won't touch squalor. A lot of people won't touch hoarding. And the people that are willing to do that, they don't have that psychological and life experience, if you like. So a lot of the homes that I go into, a lot of the situations that my clients are in, I've been there. So I can understand where they are in their life pattern. I worked with a 21-year-old, and she's been in the system since she was 5 years old. So she's angry, she's hurt, she doesn't have any trust. I understand that. So I can speak her language. I can understand her in a way that books will not teach you. Some of the best psych nurses and some of the best drug and alcohol counselors that I've ever worked with, yes, they've got university degrees, but it's their lived experience that gives them that something extra, that X factor, I guess. So that's where KC's Clutter Cure came from. A lot of people have said that I'm brave taking a step at 50 years old.
I think at any age.
At any age, and that's exactly right. And that's, I guess that's something where having a chaotic or less than ideal background, it doesn't feel like bravery to me. It doesn't feel like courage. I've been fortunate enough to have the confidence to go, okay, well, this is what we're going to do now. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. I'm not afraid of failure. And I think that's the message. If there's only one thing that people take from this today is we've all got a little voice of, is this it? Is there something else? And we get wrapped up in our roles. You know, we're mothers, we're daughters, we're sisters, we're career orientated. We have all of these roles that we forget what it is that we wanted. And so I think my number one piece of advice for people is just take one step and then take another step and then another step. And then after you've taken 100 steps, all of a sudden your life is completely different.
Oh, I love that. So what was your one step that you took, the first step in becoming a solopreneur?
My first step was believing in myself. And then my second step was reaching out and talking to people.
Because to go from, being laid off or whatever to believing in yourself, how do you get past that barrier, I guess? Like, are you mad and you're just like, I'm doing this and I'm going to prove to you? Or like, what is that?
I think that's a really good question, Hayley. I've become quite familiar with letting go of past experience. So this has happened. And in some very dark times, I had someone who I respected greatly say to me, you can let this destroy you or you can learn from it. And that piece of advice has stuck with me for my whole life. That, okay, yep, I've just spent 12 years in this job, and they've said that, no, we're okay. We can run this without you. All right, I can dwell on that and I can let that take me back to the dark places that I know what they involve, or I can let that go, mourn it. And I think it's really important that we do identify and understand that it is a mourning. It is a grieving. You're losing something that was, we spend a lot of time at work. I was spending 60 hours in this position.
Mm.
So you mourn that. So I did take a couple of weeks off and I went up to my daughter's place and I just spent a little bit of time resetting. And then came back and went, okay, this is not going to destroy me. In fact, this has given me so many skills and so many experiences that I can use this moving forward.
I love, 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 love.
Thank you.
And I think that's going to be a reel, everybody, when she said, you can let it destroy you or you can learn from it. I love that. Okay, so this is a marketing show. So let's talk a little bit about the marketing of Casey Cluttercure. How did you get customers when you started out? Like, what did you do?
I've focused heavily on social media, although I've been really successful using Facebook and LinkedIn. And it's been a lot of word of mouth and a lot of, I don't know if it's my age, Hayley, or not, but I'm a very much a face-to-face kind of a girl.
Yes.
Yeah. I love face-to-face. So I started thinking, and I guess, with the, because I did my master's of business administration, so I was very familiar with how to kind of do market research. And with my desire to go face-to-face with people, I just started making calls and I started asking, I guess, questions around, is there a gap here? Do we have someone in our area that's already doing this? And mm-hmm. The answer, fortunately, was no. And so I started getting work. At the very start, it was through care providers and services. And then through the Facebook pages, I started to get referrals from the community. So people contacting me directly. And so I tried to use the social medias as a way to visually express what my process was and where was I coming from, and that I wasn't just going to come in and take a big sweep of everybody's house, that I was there to help heal the person, because remembering that these people are in a lot of distress. And if it's the person themselves, they're them taking that one step of reaching out is massive. It's a little bit like any AA, or the first step is you've got to admit that you've got a problem. So they're full of shame and embarrassment and frustration, and they're scared. So from the social media, and then when I started getting jobs, it was really word of mouth. I think word of mouth is still one of our best marketing. If you can, when you're out in the world, you remember that at all times you are representing your brand, you are representing your business. Take each opportunity that you can to introduce it into a conversation, into when you meet people. And I think the benefit of social media is for people who are not the face-to-face, that they don't like the interacting with others, social media gives us an incredible platform. I have been very fortunate that my clients have been agreeable to photos and videos being used for marketing, and I think that's incredibly powerful. For people that are looking at the videos or looking at the posts and then they go, oh, it's not just me. Yeah. Other people are like this too. I mean, in Australia, Hayley, there's 270,000 people that we know of that are living like this. And when you go to America and the UK, like, it's incredible numbers. And I think we feel very alone when we're struggling with a difficulty. So I think the visuals have helped incredibly. And I'm not afraid to, you know, pick up the phone, talk to somebody, go in and give some free stuff away too. Like, be prepared to educate and go in and give talks, reach out to people who are looking for guests on podcasts.
And yes.
If you can't write, then, you know, we have all these incredible AI tools now. If you're not sure how to express yourself or put your story into something that's going to be eye-catching, have a look at an AI tool. They can help you. But the one thing I've learned is just put yourself out there, take a step, start talking to people, and figure out what it is that makes you unique. Why should people hire you?
Yeah. And so for you, I think that at the beginning of this chat on the marketing, you had said you had reached out to people to find out if there was others in your area who were doing the same thing. And I think that when you are the only one offering a specific type of service, especially in the way that you do, your marketing can be different than somebody who has a lot of competitors, right? And so I just want the people who are listening to understand this. So for Carrie, because she was the only one, it was a visibility thing. She needed people just to know that she existed. And if they had the problem through conversation or whatever, if they knew people with a problem, then they would be able to go to her. Now, if you're a dentist office and there's a lot of dentist office, it's not just a visibility thing. You also need to make sure that you create that niche for yourself and stand out, right?
So Yes. Figure out what makes you unique. And dentists are actually an excellent example. So, you know, dentists, they say that we're pain-free. Or that, you know, now I think you can have a very light sedative. And so that makes people stand out as a dentist. We do have other organizers in the area. However, what makes me different is these are organizers where I first started, you know, the pantry and the lounge room. And that's great. That's also required for people. So I had to think about what makes me different. And what makes me different.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought you were the only organizer in the area. Okay, so No. So your differentiator then is the niche of the specialty of the hoarding.
Correct.
And, okay, yes. And that's why you said there was no one else doing. That makes sense to me. Because
yes.
that is one of the key things. And I'm glad that we're kind of talking about this from a strategic level, is how do you stand out? What is your differentiator? One of the best ways for small businesses is that niche or specialty. And I do the same. My specialty is brand strategy, right? Purpose-driven brand strategy, actually. And so it's very niche. And so people who want that, they come to me. If they don't want that, then they don't, right?
But
it's very niche. And I always use the example of I went to Disney World. I brought my kids to Disney World when they were younger. And I hired a travel agent. But I hired a travel agent called Click the Mouse, who specialized in Disney vacations, not just any travel agent, because I wanted the specialist in what I wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And so it gives you such a competitive advantage to have a strong niche like that.
It does. And it doesn't, people can become quite overwhelmed by saying, well, I don't have anything new, unique about me. I'm a dentist, or I do this. Everybody has something. Ask your friends, ask the people that you've worked with, ask them for their opinion of what makes you different. And you'll be amazed at what you get back. I think it would be a great exercise for all of us to be able to see ourselves through other people's eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, when people say things to you and on the inside, you're like, not too sure. You've got this incredibly, incredibly amazing view of me. Not sure that how that fits. But yeah, ask people for some feedback. Like in the corporate world, you know, we do performance reviews and 360 degree reviews. And we do those all the time to understand our strengths and our areas for improvement in our working environment. We can do exactly the same thing in our personal environment, or if we're thinking of going on a journey of building something for ourselves, ask others. They will have the key to what makes you unique.
Absolutely. And I have in my book, and then also I have a course, it's called, well, right now it's called Build Your Buyer Persona, but we might rename it. But it basically teaches you, like from a marketing perspective, what you want to do is you want to find out how your absolute best clients, the perfect clients for you, think you're different, right?
Yes.
And because you want those clients, you want to be able to attract more of them. So the clients who come more often, spend more money, get a bigger benefit, those kind of clients. And you know who they are, especially if you're a solopreneur. You know who the ones that are the best, give you the most referrals. Those clients, you interview them and you ask them specific questions. And they do. They give you the answers. They're like unlock the box of effective marketing when you talk
Absolutely.
To your clients. It's literally the key.
And once you've got clients, that's absolutely invaluable information. And in the first instance of getting the clients, ask your friends and family. And then once you've got your clients, ask them, what did you like? And the better question better is an interesting word. A question that I like to ask is, where could I have done better? And don't be afraid for people to tell you where you could do better. They're not trying to offend. They're not saying that you're not good enough. And this might be just me because of my background of not being good enough. I don't know, but I've been to enough conferences where people have that imposter syndrome and we're afraid. We're afraid to hear of where can we do better. But that's where the gold is.
Funny that you asked that, because I have this buyer persona interviews that people do. And I mean, I've gone through it hundreds of times with different clients and we customize it as we go. And every business owner always wanted to add the question, what can I do to improve the service, or what can I do to improve the experience or the product? So I added it and I said, you know, this is a great question for you as a business owner to evolve to whatever, but this question isn't going to help you with your brand strategy. But I had to put it in because every single business owner I worked with wanted to know that answer. The question that I think is the most important in terms of like ask, so say you had one question to ask, why did you choose me specifically?
Well, that's a good question.
And then you prompt question. On that one. So then you say, okay, if they say, I chose you specifically because I have a hoarding problem, then you say, well, why does that matter? Like, why was that important that you chose someone who specialized in hoarding? And then they're going to give you something. And then say they've said, I want somebody who gets me. And then you say, okay, well, why is that important? And you keep drilling down. And then that question will give you so many answers as to how you're different, why you're different, and what is the emotional trigger that gets people to choose you. So that's my favorite question, like if you're going to be interviewing your customers. If you guys want all the questions, you can go. My book has a bunch of them. And then also the buyer persona course, I'll put the link down there. And you can interview your clients and get all the questions. Clients or prospects. There's questions for prospects too. But that's really good. Okay. So what would you say is the most effective thing that you've done over the years to get business and keep business? Or like from any marketing perspective?
Consistency. Be consistent. And be real. I think we live in this world where a lot of things are artificial now. I mean, Hayley, in the very near future, you'll be able to just create a clone of yourself or an avatar of yourself, and you can go off and do something else, and Avatar Hayley can do the interviews.
Yeah. I tried that. It's so creepy. So creepy.
And I think consistency and genuineness. People know when you are being genuine, and people know when you are trying to make a sale.
Mm-hmm.
If you're genuine, you are going to end up with more sales.
I agree. Yeah. And the right kind of sales. So, and I think it's a good to point out the difference between being a transactional type business and being a brand loyalty based business. So transactional businesses can get away with putting an ad on Facebook and you think it's a cool product and you buy it and you don't even know who you're buying it from, right? There is a place in the world for that and there is an audience for that. But what Carrie's built and what I've built is not that. It's relationships and meaning and transformation. And it's not about just buying it. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just a different kind of marketing. And it requires you to be real and authentic and share of yourself a little bit in your marketing.
And I think that'll become more and more important, particularly for people who are in a service-based or a people-based industry, is we spend so much time on our screens. We're becoming very encapsulated, I guess, and we're not as social. We are social, but through a screen and not through human connection. And humans are supposed to connect. Humans are supposed to be in the energy of other humans. So if you're wanting to start a service-based industry, a service-based offering where you're wanting people, then be personable. Connect with the people and be genuine. It's nice to see that people are flawed rather than this very polished, well-rehearsed, professional version of ourselves. And there is a place for that. Don't get me wrong. There is a place for that. You know, not just doing your marketing from your couch in your jammies and you're going, well, I'm being genuine and I'm being raw.
Yeah. If it works for your brand, it's okay. But if not,
if it works for your brand, that's okay. Absolutely, absolutely. And just be consistent and understand that it might take some time. You know, social media posts are something that I've really had to do some work on, because you spend all this time creating all this content and then you have a look at your insights and it went to 60 people and you're like,
yeah. Yeah, I've been there too, right? And it's something land and some things don't.
Correct. And then, you know, your next one might have a reach of 10, 20,000 and you spend time analyzing that and trying to was it the time? Was it the type of content? Was it the words that I used? But consistency is the key. It's a little bit like in investing and saving, a little bit regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll learn along the way. You'll learn along the way.
I love that. That's great advice, consistency. Okay, so one last question for you. If you were to give one piece of advice to someone who maybe was in your situation, just really ready, either had to or really ready to start their own business, what piece of advice would you give them?
There's never a perfect time. Take a deep breath, take one step and see what happens. Because it'll never be perfect.
Yeah, there's no perfect time for anything in life, I don't think. Right?
And it's okay to fail. You know, I love, there's a, I saw a, I don't know if it was a meme or, but it was the word mistake, but they had miss and take separated. So it's just a mistake. It's, how good is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not the amount of times that you fall down that count. It's the amount of times that you get back up.
Yeah. And it's not, and I know we talk about this a lot on Daring Dreams, because a lot of people, they want to start a business, I want them to be able to, like, if you have the bravery and the guts and the whatever to start a business, like, I believe that you should be able to make it work. And so, but it's that thing that people think it's just this straight line that goes straight up, but it's not. It's, you know, you might get a lot of business at first and that's the honeymoon stage, and then it starts to go down and you're like, what's happening? And you've got to figure it out. And it's usually a small marketing tweak or a big strategic thing that you missed. So the big strategic thing that you missed is like building your brand, figuring out how you're different, all of that, understanding who your customers are, where's your niche, all that. But once you get that, then it's little tweaks, right? That are going to,
yes,
it's going to, you'll get there, but it, you've got to try things.
You do. The people that are willing to take one step, they're actually ahead of the bunch anyway. You know, with the emergence of YouTube, everybody's a successful entrepreneur on the couch. And we almost get paralyzed in research. And once I learn this or once I learn this, I'll take the step then. And I think for people that do actually take that step, my figures could be incorrect, but you're in the top 5% of people. And I think 5% is actually being quite generous, because a lot of people are so wrapped up in what they currently do, or they are scared to fail. What if people don't understand what I'm trying to do? What if no one buys my product? What if I get criticized? I had my first really negative comment on a post that I put up about the client being very demeaning to the client and saying, you know, that they're just pigs or whatever it might be. Facebook has this awesome thing that you
people
can just hide
be
it.
So mean on Facebook. I wish people would start before posting things to say, would I say this to somebody face to face?
Yes, wouldn't that be a wonderful question?
Don't post it. Like,
no.
Especially like with all the political stuff going on right now, and just mean. Anyways, that is me. I don't like that.
And Facebook has this lovely little hide button. So I could have spent time trying to justify and trying to educate this person. But then you just get into a back and forth, and so I just hear the comment.
Yeah. And I think that that's good for people to know you can do that too, right? Like, you don't need to have those negative comments all over your feed. You don't need to respond to them. You can. And sometimes, you know, people will, because they want to get that engagement. They want to post things that are controversial. But yeah, you can absolutely just hide it. And I relate to that. Of people saying mean things. Like, I personally, and a lot of my clients do too. Like, when I put the book out, I was terrified. I'm like, what if people don't like it? What if I get a negative review? Like, what if my peers, like, who worked in corporate marketing with me, don't agree with how I've adapted the strategies for small business? Like, there's so many what ifs, but you just got to do it.
You just got to do it. Tell that voice to go have a coffee or something. And I think the deciding factor for me when I hid the comment was the feedback wasn't aimed at me. Mm. It was aimed at my client.
Yeah.
So if it was aimed at me, I would have left it there and then had a response. But this was aimed at my client. So I didn't want to perpetuate any more negativity, because then even people that are in that situation then read that thread, and that's just
like, I'm not gonna let her Tony pictures. I'm not gonna, like, Yeah, especially if it's a safe space, what you've created, so people can realize you're not alone.
That's right. No, that's right. Yeah, and then they go and read these comments and they're like, actually, my shame is now doubled. My embarrassment is now doubled. There's something wrong with me and the world will reject me. So I think there's a good differentiator there that it was an attack on the client rather than a negative comment about myself.
Yeah. And even if it was a negative comment about you, you get to choose. You have control on those social platforms. You get to choose how you respond to that.
That's right. Yes.
When I first started my business, I wanted people to know that you could do it yourself. You could create a business. You didn't have to hire agencies. You didn't have to have these expensive people. And so I did everything myself. So I still created my own website now, but I'm just better at it. But at that time, I wasn't as good at creating the website because it wasn't my specialty. I'm a strategist, not a website builder. And so somebody had put in one of the threads on my Facebook, probably in the first 6 months, that I would never hire this marketer. Go look at her website. Yeah. And so I was like very mad because I was trying to show that you can do this stuff on a shoestring and you can still be successful. And I was at that time, like I luckily had a really great honeymoon phase and I had a lot of clients at the beginning. And so instead of hiding the comment, I actually took a screenshot of it and did a whole post about why my website was done that way, why it was DIY, and how this person who was a copywriter in the area will now not be a copywriter for me. And it was mean, but I did it in a kind way, but he did send me an apology later. But why would you say that? Like, I'm a new business. I'm trying to start out. I'm trying to help people to not spend thousands and thousands of dollars that don't need to be spent. Especially when you're starting out, it was just somebody being mean for no reason.
Yeah. And or in the actual reason fact, was I did you
jealousy or whatever, right? But
yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my most engaging posts. People loved it. Like, I think I called the post what I did when someone dissed my website. It was like the big, you know, and I think, you know, it was good because it actually helped me dig even deeper into why I was doing this. And for me, it was I had seen one of my friends spend a ton of money on marketing because he hired all these agencies, but none of them dug deep enough and did the brand strategy or his clients. And so all this money he spent was wasted because none of it was effective because he didn't do the basic strategic stuff. And that's why I started my business, because I'm like, this is not fair. Like, this is my friend and he basically got not duped. I mean, they were well-meaning, I think, but there's a process. And if you're going to spend the money, you've got to get somebody to do it the right way. So
I really love, and I'm sure you're aware of Brené Brown.
Yes.
Yeah. I love when she recited Teddy Roosevelt's poem about being in the arena and that everybody, like there's lots of cheap seats and people are very, very willing to throw things from the cheap seats, from the keyboard warrior. And I love, and it really changed me fundamentally that unless you're in that arena with me, and if your viewers haven't seen it or your listeners haven't heard it, it's Brené Brown and run her vulnerability TED Talk, because she got a huge backlash. Like it was incredible. They picked on her look, her clothes, her weight, her marriage, her advice. Like it was just, her story is incredible. But when she gives the talk of this quote, it's if unless you're in the arena with me and you're covered in blood and sweat and tears, then I have no use for whatever it is that you have to say. Because unless you're in there with me, if you're just throwing stuff from the cheap seats.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not to dismiss people's opinions, but for it to not soak in to our core.
Yeah. And those people are not, I think when you're a business owner, you also need to look at it like those are not your ideal clients. That person who said that your client was a pig, that is not somebody who's going to buy your service. So you don't have to justify anything to them. You're right to hide that, right? Because that person is never going to buy anything you sell, because obviously they aren't, they don't have that kind of problem, or they would be more sympathetic towards it. And I just think a lot of times we worry so much about these comments, and they're not even people who would buy. So just see ya. Get rid of them, right?
Yeah.
Like that copywriter who had a really nice website of his own or whatever, he's not going to buy my services. He even said I would never buy from her. So why am I worried about him? Right?
There's billions of people in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't let the one bring you down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. It's great advice. What a great conversation. Thank you so much. It has been an absolute pleasure getting to know you. And I wish you all the best. And I know that you're going to change so many more lives. And I'm really happy
thank
about
you.
That. You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Hayley. I feel very blessed and privileged to have been invited to come and talk to you. So thank you. I've had a great time.